The Subaltern Podcast with Nikesh Shukla. Download for free off iTunes and thesubaltern.tumblr.com. Follow Nikesh on Twitter at Nikesh Shukla. The Subaltern Podcast. Hey, welcome to episode 55 of the Subaltern Podcast, season 4, episode 1, which is episode 55. The last season of the Subaltern Podcast. This is basically the lost episodes, the 10 episodes that I've had recorded since, May, I think. I've had Akhil Sharma, Ned Bowman, Jeff Dyer, Tim Winton, Joshua Ferris, more people in the can since then. I haven't had any time. Look, okay, so here's the selly bit that I have to do. Basically, I've had a new book out recently called Meat Space, and it came out in July, and it's been intense, man. It's been really intense putting that out. I mean, the book came out, I did lots of events, I wasted a lot of hours retweeting, not wasted a lot of hours, I spent a lot of time retweeting reviews, and I wasted a lot of hours staring at my static Amazon sales ranking and hoping that something might change, and here I am a few months later with all these brilliant interviews, and I just think, time to get them out and get the podcast done. And yeah, so basically, here's the very, very quick hard sell that I'm going to do. These are 55 episodes where I haven't asked for any money. I've, hosting costs money. And if you've absorbed the free content and liked it in any way, I would love it if you bought Meat Space. I would really love it if you bought Meat Space. That would make me so happy. And the thing is, this interview is with Akhil Sharma, and he wrote probably one of my favourite books this year. Definitely. Actually, you know what? My favourite book that I've read this year is called Family Life, and it's funny and weird and heartbreaking and brilliant, and I love it so much. I'd love it if you bought both of our books. If you're going to buy two books this year, buy both of ours. They will stand you in good stead. So with that said, here's my conversation with Akhil Sharma. We had some sound problems. We actually ended up having a really in-depth conversation after our podcast about being brown. And it was a shame that the recorder wasn't on. But, you know, we talked about family life and about how long it took him to write it. And he says some really great, great things about expectation, basically. So please, please, please buy his book. Buy my book, Meat Space. I will love you forever. Here we go. Episode 55 of the Subaltern Podcast, Akhil Sharma.
We'll do recording device.
Welcome to the podcast, Akhil Sharma. How are you? How is your trip to London going?
It's been very interesting. I was, it's very different from my first book, which is what I compare, everything to. So in my first book, it was very, very quiet. There weren't that many people interested, and this time there's just sort of an endless barrage of interviews, and that's sort of interesting. It's interesting to be in a situation where people have hopes and expectations regarding the book, and it's, you know, I'm also a different person, so it's interesting to see how much I have changed in terms of how I'm experiencing the. And how I'm interacting with the people that I'm meeting.
What I wonder is, after a day of interviews talking about a book that's ostensibly about family, whether you end up finding that people project their own feelings about their families onto your prose.
No, that has not been my experience. It's an interesting question. It hasn't been my experience. I don't find that people are projecting feelings or ideas that are not in the book. What I'm finding instead is that people are relating quite strongly to the book. And that I find remarkably touching. You know, it's not... With my first book, I just wanted to write a good book. With this one, I sort of wanted... I wanted the book to be useful, and to see people responding is, you know, to some extent, of course, you project, there is a projection in that, but I'm not finding people saying things that are unexpected.
The book really blew me away. I'm such a massive fan of it. I read it in a day, and then I had to think about it for a day, and then I read it again. It really, really broke my heart and made me laugh and made me cry and all of the emotions. And one of the things that, as a writer myself, one of the things that it really taught me a lot about was the ability to convey a complex array of emotions in quite concise prose. So I wonder how much of the writing of the book was rewriting and how much of it was writing.
Hey, thank you for that. You know, thank you for saying those things, and thank you for making such an effort to read it. I appreciate this. It isn't normal for a writer to be read that way. So thank you. I'm always trying to make things simpler, that is, make the writing simpler, and yet do not lose complexity. I'm afraid of, there is, you know, if you, when we oftentimes, you know, life is complicated. The problem is that when we express these complicated things in a complicated way, the emotions get lost because the mind becomes quite engaged in trying to figure things out. And what I want to do is to create a sense of intimacy for the reader so that when the reader is reading this thing, everything feels natural and everything feels very, you know, very relatable. And that required a lot of care. I don't know if there is an enormous amount of revision. You know, a revision, as the way that I think of revision is somebody taking a sentence and then moving it around. For me, oftentimes, the way that there was a lot of that on a, when what I was thinking of was in terms of the overall novel, which when I was writing it, I would just begin with a fresh draft each time I began it. You know, each time I finish a draft, the next draft would just be start with a blank page. And so in that sense, there wasn't revision, there was rewriting. But certainly in the way that I think you were talking about, which is conveying complicated things to a reader, there was an enormous amount of that, like moving words around, figuring out how can this be, how can I say this thing very quickly. Or, you know, that here is a strong emotion. I need to dampen it. So what can I place here to dampen that emotion? There was a lot of that.
I don't know if it just felt very familiar to me, having grown up as a Gujarati Indian, born to Kenyan Indian parents in London. And, you know, so much of when I visualize the house that the book's set in, I sort of visualize a house very familiar to what I grew up in. I don't know if part of why it resonated with me was because it spoke to so many things that I had grown up around. But did you have that in mind when you were writing, that not only is this, you know, it doesn't feel like an immigrant book or a diaspora book, for want of a better word. It feels like a very universal book, but at the same time there is an element of it that really will resonate with the diaspora community.
Mm-hmm. You know, I keep saying this, you know, I keep saying this in all of my interviews that I want this book to be useful. And part of it was to capture my community and capture my family. And you know, when a writer is able to capture something strongly, it becomes something universal. So I wanted to write about the diaspora. I wanted to write about, you know, that first wave of Indian immigrants to the U.S. And to that extent, you know, whereas with my first book, I would have resisted the Indian immigrant as a label, you know, for the novel. In this one, I don't resist it, which is sort of interesting because in this book, a few people have applied that label, but mostly people have not.
It's an interesting point because my first novel was about a feeling of feeling displaced, and you know, the background to it was about an Indian community in Northwest London, and I found quite quickly that because it featured Indian characters, I became known as a British Asian novelist, and I've struggled with whether I want to be known as a British Asian novelist, whether that label belongs to me in the same way that, say, David Nichols will never be referred to as English novelist David Nichols. He's just David Nichols, the author of One Day. Have you ever struggled with that kind of lazy labeling in any way?
You know, I did with my first novel. That is, I was referred to all the time as an Indian novelist. Though, you know, most of my life had been spent in America, and I was an American citizen. And the book was viewed as an Indian novel. And when that was occurring, I felt kind of hurt, you know, because I felt that my book was being diminished. I felt that my book was being diminished, and to some extent that I was being diminished, because I had done all the work, you know, to make it a novel, you know, a real novel. And I didn't feel it was fair that it would be judged the way it was being judged. So I can relate to what you're saying.
Hmm. And another thing that fascinated me about how the book was written was the length of time that you took to write it between after the first one. And I wondered, did you struggle with writing this book at all, or was it the book that you were always going to write? And then did you just feel that you needed a bit of time before you started it?
It never spelled out. It was always sort of a battle. I think that the book took so long because there were just sort of these enormous technical challenges that the book has. And it took me a long time to figure them out. For me, the biggest one was simply how to write a book with very little plot. And how to write a book with very little plot that would still read very quickly and compulsively. And trying to figure that out took a long time. And then there were other things, you know, like I wanted to fill the book with life. And that takes up, you know, figuring that out takes up a long time, figuring out or generating content that is lively, you know, that is undeniably lifelike. Not merely lifelike, but actual life. And so that took a long time. I'm just really, really glad that's behind me. It was not a fun thing. I've been saying this a lot, and I feel like I should say it again because I want to remember. I don't want to forget it. Knowing what I know now, I certainly would not have started this book. You know, I just feel like our lives are not abstractions. The choices we make have real consequences. You know, who we marry has a real consequence, and so what we decide to write about has a real consequence. And so I would not have chosen to write this book knowing all the stuff that I know now.
How do you feel about the next one? Are you in a position where you're thinking about it, or?
My my hope is the next thing that I'm going to be publishing is a collection of short stories. And that, I assume, just because many of the stories I've already published, won't be too difficult. And then I'm not sure what's going to occur next in terms of my writing. I don't know. I'm actually tremendously frightened of beginning another book. I don't have it in me to enter into this sort of battle with the book. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to conceive of it even.
The landscape for novelists seems to have changed a lot in the 7 years between your two books. Have you noticed things feeling different this time around that weren't around when you were when the first book came out, and how are you reacting to that?
Partially because the book is being treated differently. Like, the book is being treated like something that can be a success or a big prize winner. It's receiving a level of attention which is causing me to do things which I wouldn't have done before. That is, a lot of magazines have asked me to write little articles for them. A lot of internet sites have asked me to write for them. And so I'm doing all of these things. So that's, I'm not sure whether the magazine writing is something that is due to the change of the media landscape, or whether it's simply that this book is being perceived as something that the first book was not. I mean, I think my first book is a very, very, very good book. And so I'm not sure whether that change, that's the biggest change that has occurred for me. The interviews with bloggers or such, it's not really something that I think much about. You know, whenever I'm asked to do an interview, I just do my interview. I don't think of it. I don't really spend much time thinking about the changed media landscape. I just don't think about it.
With this book, are you finding that people are sort of asking the same sorts of questions when it comes to how close is it to your actual family life, and is it a subject that you're kind of tiring of talking about, as it were?
People are asking the same questions because for any audience that is being introduced to the book, there are certain questions that people want answers to, or that the interviewer would like to have attention drawn to, like why a memoir, why a novel instead of a memoir, why did it take 12 and a half years, this whole media landscape thing. So people are asking all of these things. I find it interesting. For me, one of the things that's interesting is, there are two things. One, I find that the more I talk about the book, the more distant I feel from it. You know, the more I feel like, okay, somebody else wrote it. And then the other thing which is something that I'm very leery of, is that the more interviews I do, the better a writer I think I am. Hmm. You know, all this attention makes me think I am deserving of attention. Whereas, and I remember that I had the same experience with my first book, where when I handed in the book, I thought, there's some good things in the book and there's some not good things in the book. And then when I began getting good reviews, and when famous writers began praising it, I began thinking, I'm a genius. And sort of a similar thing is occurring here. I'm trying, though, to not... I'm not reading the reviews, and I'm trying to not take in, trying to deflect or trying to accept the attention for largely what it is, which is, you know, that for, and I'm not saying this about you, but for many newspapers and magazines, they just need content. So they're going to, it's just simply a cycle, and I'm part of that cycle. It doesn't really signify that much about me. So I'm trying to view things in that manner, and that I feel might be healthier for me in the long run. That won't lead to any craziness, or less craziness.
Huh. Well, seeing as I've asked two out of the three questions that you seem to be asking a lot, I'm going to go a little off-piste here and ask, what is the best thing you can cook?
I cook very rarely. The thing that I make, which is very tasty, is probably spaghetti sauce. But I only cook, two or three dishes, and none of them is especially outstanding. So if I were to if you were to come to my apartment and if I were to cook you dinner, if I were cooking dinner and if I could control things, if my wife would say that, this is acceptable, I would make you spaghetti. My wife, however, would think that that's not sophisticated enough fare for a guest. So I would end up following some recipe book and cooking you something else.
Finally, what are you reading at the moment that's exciting you?
I'm reading a biography of Samuel Beckett called Damned to Fame, which I find really wonderful. Partially because I think Beckett, I love Beckett, but I don't know an enormous amount about him. And I would like to, with really great writers, it gives me a lot of pleasure to know about their life. It makes their work seem more important. After you've read the work, you can begin looking at the work in a slightly different way based on what you have learned from their life or from their diaries or from biographies of them. So I'm reading that, and I'm not sure if the biography itself is the thing that is making me happy or the sense of being close to Beckett that is making me happy.
Now I want to know something obscure about you, so I to help with my deeper appreciation of the book. Tell me an obscure Akhil Sharma fact that I can give as an exclusive to the podcast fans.
Okay, my book review was on the my book was reviewed on the cover of the Sunday New York Times. The night before the review was going to come out, I had a batch of coupons which were about to expire. So I spent that evening going from store to store, cashing in my coupons. So that's sort of the nitty gritty of my life. It's actually who I am. That is, I'm basically at heart, I'm a lower middle class person who clips his coupons and gains great pleasure from saving 70 cents on his razor blades.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for listening. Please buy my book. Please buy Akhil's book. Episode 56 is coming very soon, and it will be with Joshua Ferris. Okay, peace.